Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
I don't know how she does it. That's my mom comes in. She's the only one in the audience. She still believes in me. She was yelling at me. I didn't think she was going to show, but she comes in. Just mom. Thanks again, mom. Thanks for the enthusiasm. You know what enthusiasm is, don't you? The Latin term for enthusiasm is the God within you. So thanks, mom. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org. The most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. The unknown universe is squeezed down, as we've been saying as of late, the GSO. It's not the KGB, but the GSO is the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, has produced through the auspices of The Grapevine, our monthly meeting in print, our magazine, a 12-step sponsorship book. Called One-on-One Sponsorship. This is the first time this organization has produced such a work since its inception 78 years. So we pray and hope that this is a sign that sponsorship is coming back to the forefront of recovery. Now, a disclaimer, since we've mentioned that, this is not AA. We do not represent AA, NA, or CA. This is more like Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meeting, and if you're able to hold in for the whole show, you might think it's Narcoleptics Anonymous. Now, we should have a good show today. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audiences in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, so does the world. What we have found is the majority of the problems we've had with alcohol and drugs derive from the family, children not being taught correct principles. Now you teach them correct principles, and then they teach themselves. So if the correct principles go wanting, there's nobody to teach them. And what happens, what we find, is that they grow up like empty lot weeds. There's nobody there. The gangs, the groups, and, of course, drugs, sex, and rock and roll is the primary teacher. And, of course, it worked for me, and it worked for a lot of us at the time. But it's part of the epidemic that's going on right now. And make no mistake, it's an epidemic proportion. There's more of us now than it's ever been before. I believe it's something like 2.5 million die yearly from alcohol. I believe that's 10 times more than the prescription drug addict. So more people die from alcohol than all the other drugs combined. Amazing, isn't it? You would have thought it would have been heroin or one powders or something. No, it's alcohol. Alcohol's the killer. And Harold, my co-sponsor, also goes to the prisons. He goes to the prisons carrying recovery. And he does that because in the prisons we find the majority of the folks that are in there connected up with drugs and alcohol. Crimes of opportunity fueled by drugs and alcohol. Now, of course, we have some career criminals, and you're always going to find a horse thief looking for a free ride, but the vast majority is about drugs and alcohol. So it's a drain on our schools. It's a drain on our prison system. It's a drain on the pocketbook, spirituality. It's a drain. So what we're doing at Rum Radio is trying to put the plug in the jug. I think we call it the what it really boils down to is the jug or not. Harold, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thanks for you. Thank you for that introduction. I've found that my field of family therapy and recovery for individuals and families has changed quite a bit. It is true that the far more people die from alcohol problems than all the other drugs put together. Alcohol is a drug. And we can't make a mistake about that. I've worked with a lot of families who lose children, and that's a very, very huge tragedy. The three leading causes of death for children, 15 to 25, number one by far is car wrecks. So I beg parents not to get their kids a car when they're 16. Wait till they go to college and reward that good behavior with a car. The second cause of death is AIDS, and the third is suicide. So when our number one assignment as parents is to keep our kids safe and healthy. Number two is to show our kids how to succeed in the real world. And if we're going to keep the kids safe and healthy, we have to help them, we have to keep them out of cars and give them some values and morals. And so, anyway, the 12-step program has saved my life, and it has really affected my kids in a positive way. I just want to express my appreciation for everyone that came before and has kept those rooms open and kept the meetings going, all the 12-step meetings. And I want to say a little bit about what we're doing on the program here. I want everyone to know that Joseph does not make money on this website or the radio program. In fact, he's invested thousands in establishing and improving the website. And the website is rumradio.org. If you go there now, you can click in the right upper right corner. There's the word live, and you can find the radio program. You can find our chat room, and the chat room is open and waiting for you to ask questions. If you'd like to call in and ask a question live, you're welcome to do that. The whole thing is done over the telephone, and let me give the phone number. It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. So join in, ask some questions. We've got a few listeners logging in right now as I speak, and so I'll turn it back over to you, Joseph.
Yeah, thank you, Harold. And the phone number in Indonesia is 949-534-0621. We're also very popular in Nepal. We've done a lot of work on Facebook. You know why we're popular in Nepal? They like our yak. Tonight we have a guest before I get into him, Steve C. You there, Steve?
I am.
We're looking forward to your story. But before we get into that, I was looking at your bio. Very interesting. I think the listeners are going to get really enlivened and get some really solid information about recovery. But before I do that, Steve, I'd like to open the show with the third step prayer. The third step prayer is found in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous called the Big Book. And I use the Big Book and the 12 and 12, but the Big Book is the template of all 12-step recovery programs. This is where the original understanding comes from. And so I like to use the original. You know, everything else gets a little different. Most 12-step programs, the only difference is the first step, which actually mentions the addictive substance or behavior. Other than that, they're pretty well just about the same. We've come to the agreement that this is a disease of mind, body, and mostly spirit. It's a spiritual disease. Spirit is contra spiritum. Dr. Young wrote that. With spirits against spirit against the ravages of spirit. And he had found that alcohol was nothing more than a man's quest, or in medieval language, looking for a conscious contact with God. So it's a spiritual. So we find this to be a very spiritual concept. But we have to start slowly. Usually we have to start with understandings. And when I get a sponsee, I ask him certain questions. Have you had enough? Yes or no? Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? I give him Clancy 7 questions. I need him back tomorrow. If I get him back, then we get started. And the first assignment, and if I don't get it back, two things have happened. He's either not ready or he's not ready for me, which is okay. The Big Book says go find a prospect and start working on him. It also alludes to the fact that if you start working on somebody and they're not interested, don't waste your time. Go find someone else who's interested in what you have. So sponsorship has been the key in the beginning, is now, and shall ever be. You know, this is about one drunk talking to another drunk, one addict talking to another addict. If there has to be a certain connection, I believe, on the first step. If you don't have a connection, a familiar experience in the first step, you might have sympathy, but you don't have the empathy that is required to have that reality of understanding. And I think that's really key. But I found personally that the 12 steps will work on any and all addictions, although we concentrate on NA and CA because it's drugs and alcohol. I believe that they're kissing cousins, and this is what we're dealing with. And there's other 12-step programs, and that's fine. And they do work. Remember, folks, it does really work. It's helped millions and millions of people. The only requirement is a desire. It says a desire to stop drinking in the third tradition. You're a member if you say so. It's a very laissez-faire kind of deal. It's really a sponsor's job is to get the sponsee, the newcomer, the new man, the guy that's in enough pain to get him with a conscious contact with his creator or the God of his understanding. That's what a sponsor does, and the fellowship. Having said that, the first assignment is to get a home group. That's their lifeline group. I believe men with men and women with women. Some people disagree. I say that as a general rule. It's just easier to relate to the same gender. 1, 2, sponsorship is a very intimate relationship and can be easily misconstrued, misunderstood, and it could lead to dire consequences. But if you can't find the same gender or it didn't work out that way, you know what? You work the 12 steps. And if it doesn't work with that sponsor, you know what? You get a different sponsor. All sponsorship is temporary. It's either temporary for a day or temporary for a lifetime or anywhere in between. What we found is the bulwark to sobriety, when you get on that emotional roller coaster, is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps and fill in the blank. And one of the first assignments I ask my sponsees to do is on page 63 of the Big Book is the third step prayer. It's also called the surrender prayer. Ask one of the fellows in its home group to get a piece of paper or a newcomer's packet, and they give their name and their phone number and get permission to call them. They're giving permission, you're giving your phone number. But I want him to call a different fella every day for the next 30 days and ask him permission to recite the third step prayer. The reason I do that, it gets them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Connects them up with his home group. He gets to know them, and they get to know him. Third step prayer also encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And the fellow he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol. Probably won't. We have no guarantees. All we do is have a trust in God and taking action. That's what we've learned to seem to work the best. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen on that. Yeah.
Thank you. On it. Okay. Well, thy way of life, and that way of life is being of maximum service to God and my fellows. That is the way of life that the big book is talking about. I believe when the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. And that's enough out of me. I can't wait, Steve, to hear your story, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and what keeps you at the maximum service to God and your fellows. Tell us, when was the first time that you realized that alcohol did it for you?
Ooh, wow. Well, I guess that coincides with my very first spiritual experience. I was about 16 years old. I was working as a bar back in a local 5-star restaurant / watering hole, and every Wednesday was delivery day, and my job was to stock the liquor room and unload all the truck and get the kegs in and get the empties sent off. And so one particular Wednesday, I walk up to the manager's office. I knock on the door because I had to get the key from him. And he threw the key at me and he said, "Put that on your keychain and quit bugging me." And I tell you, gentlemen, the heavens opened up. I heard the angels singing, and I knew right then, because I'd already drunk before, but I knew right then that I had a daily supply of the water of life. And wow. Several years before that, I'd had my very first drink, and I can remember just thinking, like, you know, there was things that I enjoyed. I enjoyed putting extra sugar on my cereal. I enjoyed, you know, eating candy. But when I had my first shot of whiskey, it tasted horrible. But the effect that it gave me let me know that this was something that I wanted more of. And That day at that restaurant, I knew I was going to be able to have as much of it as I wanted, and I sure racked up a nice big amends list with that employer. And it was right around that time that I ended up actually going to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. A little surprised that as I started drinking on a regular basis, I started having more run-ins with the law. It was 1983. I showed up at my very first meeting of AA, had no idea what was going on. I was there. I was voluntold by a judge. He seemed pretty adamant that I needed to go to AA. And so there I was. I was court ordered. I know a lot of folks in the rooms have different opinions about that. And at this very first meeting, my view of Alcoholics Anonymous was that it was associated with the courts because I was court ordered to go.
Okay, so let me ask, so you really didn't have a bottom at that point, like the jumping off point. So you weren't there yet. You were.
It was just getting good. It was getting good.
This is a nudge from the judge, and I agree with you. A lot of people, the way it's handled now, it has the appearance of being part of the punishment process of the courts. You agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm also grateful for it because, you know, being a little bit of a reader of AA history, knowing that Bill and Bob messed around with seances and spook rooms and stuff, I think they put some voodoo on me at that early meeting because Well, let me just tell you, the very first meeting I went to, I had a court slip paper in my hand. I go to get my paper signed. I'm sitting in the back of the room. The speaker gets up, and he starts speaking. And a few minutes into his story, his bottle falls out of his coat pocket. And it wasn't a bottle of water. It was a bottle of booze. Yeah,
wow.
First meeting. The guy, you know, everybody stops, and there's about 80 people in the room, and all eyes are looking at the bottle. All eyes start looking up at him, and everybody seems to be is like a tennis match. They're going from the speaker to the bottle on the floor. Well, the guy picks it up and walks out of the meeting. And the poor secretary, you know, God bless him, I hope he stayed sober. He tried to salvage this meeting, and you know, we all wanted our dollar back, and we wanted our paper signed, and we all knew that this was a big lie.
Wow,
what an experience.
And when folks tell me today that there's no such thing as a bad meeting, I say, you weren't with me in 1983. and it's okay to acknowledge that there's a bad meeting. It's perfectly okay. We certainly are not, we are more than fallible people.
I've heard of people getting triggered at meetings, but that is among the best.
Yeah, well, that's a true story too. That's not even you know, Drunkalog 101. That absolutely happened.
That is great.
The next 6 years, my life got so horrible that I went to AA voluntarily, even though that first impression. That first impression would have been a lasting impression had the examples that followed did not make that first impression seem like, okay, maybe they're all not like this guy. You know, maybe they're all not like this. I walked into that first meeting with, you know, trust issues, and I was a punk kid. I was a teenager, and I certainly wasn't ready to get sober. And anybody over the age of 30 was not my friend. And anybody over the age of 20 was probably dumber than me. And once I wasn't open to that. But what happened over the next 6 years was that alcohol took me on a ride and took me to some places and took me to some other things. And people from AA would show up. I mean, I tell a story about, I remember it was a cold November night, and I'm driving my car, and it somehow ends up in a ditch, and I'm out, and I'm trying to figure out what to do, and I'm half in the bag, and my buddies drive by, and they beep the horn, they wave at me, and it's raining and cold outside. They drive by, and I'm standing there wondering why they didn't stop, and somebody pulls up behind me, and it's a gentleman from Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, hey, Steve, I saw you over here. Figured I'd give you a hand. Well, we couldn't get my car out of the ditch. He gets me home. Next day, the same gentleman comes, knocks on my door, and helps me get my car out of the ditch. And I'm thinking, like, all the while, like, okay, what's the catch? What's the catch? Well, there was no catch. There was never there was nothing. There was no, you know, there was no lecturing. No, you know, it says on page 18 of the big book, it gives a great description of an alcoholic that's recovered from the disease of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. This gentleman had nothing but the sincere desire to help me, you know, and he wasn't trying to, you know, get me into the cult. You know, the coffee drinker's cult that I thought existed. He wasn't trying to, you know, make me tithe or anything. He just wanted to help me get my car out of the ditch. He had no words of wisdom from a podium, because nothing anybody said in a meeting at that time was ever going to beat that first impression. But that example, that behavior, that beat all that other stuff that I saw and that, all the stuff that I thought I saw, so that, you know, October 15th, 1989, within a day or two of that, that's my assigned sobriety date. Somebody told me that was my sobriety date. And they gave me two things when I came in. They gave me that sobriety date, which may or may not be completely it, but, you know, it's close enough. And then they also gave me a label. They told me I was an alcoholic and an addict. That's what AA members told me, because I didn't tell you anything. They said, kid, you're an alcoholic and an addict, and if you're ready, we got something that we can do for you. And, you know, there was evidence. I mean, I was an IV drug user, and there was evidence of drug use on that you could see when you looked at me. So this is what AA gave me, and, you know, the things that you had just talked about a little bit in the beginning, I got half of that. I got get a home group and get involved. So what they told me was get a home group, get involved, and become a part of. And because of some of those gentlemen that I had met that simply just seemed to care, that opened the door up that much more. That beat back all those misconceptions and all those ideas. But, you know, the fellowship, as we both know, is far from perfect. It's full of people like us, and we're people that, you know, aren't always on the beam. We aren't always growing spiritually. And after a few years, those same people that gave me the label of alcoholic addict started to tell me that I'm trying to be special for being an alcoholic addict in AA. Kind of funny how that duality exists, you know, because somebody had come to a meeting and spoke up about the issue of dual addiction and said it in a way that a lot of other folks just kind of got in that camp, and then all of a sudden, the same guy that got told he was an alcoholic and an addict is now being told, hey, you're trying to be a special alcoholic. And for a while, I fought that sort of thing. But, you know, as we were talking about with the third step prayer, where the program beats out the BS is that, when you're taking that nightly review, you're doing that 11-step at night, and I'm looking at how can I serve my fellows better. You know, back in the fourth step, we talked about, you know, it mentions the inventory was ours, not the other person's. And, you know, we get into the angry man's prayer on page 67. Though we did not like their behavior, we saw that they, like us, were sick too. Well, I was fortunate to have a good sponsor that put my nose in that big book early on. And he would say things like that to me. He's like, you know, Steve, you're not, you know, this isn't a hotbed of mental health. What does the program have to offer you that can help you with these sort of things? So eventually I dropped the and I held on to it for a while just for spite, because I'm certainly not a saint myself. But I eventually dropped that. And I just, you know, I learned it was okay to just be an alcoholic in AA. And I carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to alcoholics. But I also... You know, at the age of 22, alcohol alone didn't bring me to my knees. There was narcotics, and there was a lot of other substances involved that helped bring me to my knees. And I kind of pushed that aside. I was able to cross the bridge and just kind of assimilate into AA. And what I watched over the years was a lot of folks who struggled with that. I watched a lot of folks, and I took folks to other fellowships, and I took folks to church organizations that might be able to help them, where AA was limited to alcoholics only, which is as it should be. But something always nagged at me, and it really, it caused a lot of, turmoil inside, because that idea that we have to be of maximum service to God and our fellows about us, I felt like I wasn't. So many years go by, I'm sober in AA, I'm getting up, you know, 10, 12 years, and I meet a young fella at a meeting, and he's obviously, alcohol is not his main problem, and he's told, well, just put it in a bottle, just put, you know, once again, the fellowship, we mean well, we want to get you in the door, we want you to get better, and sometimes we try to widen the road for you. And maybe that's not our job, maybe that is, but they're telling this young fella, you know, just put the drugs in a bottle. And what I kept hearing was, just start your recovery on a lie. Start your recovery on a lie. So the guy ends up asking me to be his sponsor after the meeting. And we start talking and we start going through the big book. And he doesn't really fit in AA. And he's never drank. He's a drug addict, and he starts really struggling with that. So I start taking him to NA, and the NA program doesn't speak to him, and he's telling me that, and I have nothing but love for one of the guys that 12-stepped me is a 28-year member of Narcotics Anonymous. I've got nothing but love for them, but the program that spoke to me, that touched my heart, was the program that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, and that's what was happening to this guy. He was stuck there, and we were able to find Cocaine Anonymous at the time. So that was like a light bulb going off. Oh, wow, CA, you know, this is great. So we're talking Big Book, and, you know, he goes and he gets very much involved in that. And I always, you know, I will always be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't walk away from the people that gave me the life that I have to live today. But that day I also found out that, you know, to be of maximum service, I may have to step outside of what AA's intended purpose is and take that program, which I believe is universal, out to other folks. So a few years ago, I moved up here to rural Pennsylvania, and I'm in a tiny little town, and it has a huge heroin problem. And, you know, there's a lot of opiates running around and a lot of heroin addicts coming in and out of Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I see the same thing. There's a lot of folks that come in, they go over to NA, and they find a home, they find a life, and they find the freedom that we find here. And that's wonderful. That's beautiful. But then there's that type that are like me, that the Big Book is what's talking to them. When they hear that Big Book recovery, that's what's talking to them. And I've heard you say on a couple podcasts I've listened to, and I've certainly said it myself, that the first three steps can happen at a traffic light. It can happen in a blink of an eye. And when you're ready, you're ready. And it's not an intellectual process. It's an internal.
You know, when they discovered that, you know, when I discovered, actually, looking at the history, there's a thing called the surrender. And Dr. Bob had that. You know, there was different flavors, but Dr. Bob had the surrender, Dr. Bob and the good old boys. And what you had to do, hospitals were the breeding ground. That's where you went to get your pigeons. That's where you went to find your prospects and the new man. That was the thing. And then you would go there, and that's where the word sponsor comes from. You'd go in there, and you would find somebody, and you only had 6 days. It was six-day detox. So they let you know right away as soon as a new guy came in. So they were Johnny on the spot, and then they had 6 days to convince him that there was a way, out of their dilemma. So before, if you agreed, yes, you know, I'd like to, you're desperate now because you're in a lot of pain. You're just newly sober. You're not really sober. You've just gone through detox, you know. Like 3-4 days anyway. By the sixth day, you're out. So, okay, you want to do this again? You want to get off the merry-go-round? Okay, now what you have to do is get down on your knees. And basically, they did the first three steps at the hospital. And you couldn't go to a meeting until you did that. And then if you didn't do that, you had to do it either at the Williams house or you did it upstairs at the Oxford group. And then you went to an AA meeting. And then the restitution steps were done within a matter of days.
Absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, and I met those guys that you know, were like, hey, I'm on fire, and I need to do it now. And once again, I'm blessed, you know, at 90 days sober, and I got sober in the Baltimore area, and it was absolutely unheard of at that time to do a 4-step before you had a year sober. And my sponsor, my sponsor was picked for me at 90 days. I'd had two before, and I fired both of them because it became painfully obvious that both of them knew less about sobriety than I did. And I knew I didn't know anything. So I asked this one guy to be my sponsor, and he said, I can't, Steve, because I'm still working this thing myself, but I'll help you find somebody. And he introduced me to a man who said, when do you want to get well? And I remember it clearly because I looked at him. I said, now is as good a time as any. And this is the type of folks that I had met coming in and out of these meetings, coming in and out of these AA meetings, and they're coming in kind of under the radar, some of them are learning the language, and they, you know, that's why, like, me telling you I'm an alcoholic doesn't really say, it just tells you I've been trained. You know, it tells you that I've been taught out in the parking lot what to say in order to get in. Make sure you give them a buck, don't complain about the coffee, and say you're an alcoholic, and you're good. You're in. You're safe for an hour. You know, but these guys are coming in, and I've moved around a lot. I'm in the military, and I've moved every 2 to 4 years. So my most of my recovery has been being a transient. And now I'm living in this one spot for years, and I'm watching as these folks are coming in and out, and they're just dying. So I call a bunch of guys over that kind of have stories like mine, that found their way into Alcoholics Anonymous and found a home in AA. And I've done a lot of reading. I did reading on All Addicts Anonymous. I'm advocating at this time for Cocaine Anonymous, CA. And I get these guys in, and we're all talking about what do we do for these addicts that aren't making it in NA and aren't really supposed to be in AA, because they're not going to be members, and they're not able to get that human connection that's essential for recovery to take place. So we talk about it, and I'm pushing for CA, and I'm my military alpha's coming out, and I'm pushing and pushing and pushing. And one of the guys looks at me and he says, "Steve, if we go with CA, we're putting another substance label on there, and these guys are dying from heroin overdoses. They're not smoking crack." And so we went with Drug Addicts Anonymous, which I clicked the link. I put the link on my bio, the first site that I had gone to, which was the UK site, and it's another big book based recovery. It's a big book. Big book only, and we're taking addicts through the steps. And so in 2012, we brought DAA to Percocet, Pennsylvania, home of the Mennonite Mafia, Scrapple, and Drug Addicts Anonymous. And you know, it's growing up around us, and it's an amazing thing to be a part of, because here we are with guys, and a lot of them, you know, most of us see ourselves as AA members, but we're also setting aside this one meeting. And I think about Bill Wilson's article in the Grapevine back in the 50s on problems other than alcohol, where he's talking about exactly what we're doing right here. You know, we're not AA when we're doing this. I mean, I'm a home group member in good standing in my AA home group. I'm involved in all three legacies. But also as a person who you know, has this new employer that apparently keeps putting these people in my path, he wants me to do something with them, and this is what we're doing. And I got to talk to some of the guys who started it up. This is the first 12-step fellowship that started outside of the U.S. And really, we could honestly say that Joe and Charlie are co-founders, because an addict from Sweden came to a rehab in America, heard Joe and Charlie tapes back in the 90s, and took those back to Sweden and started DAA with a couple of other folks. And it's grown up since 97. It took hold in England, and England has a yearly convention every year now, and we've got three meetings here in PA. Right after I got started, and I want to put in a plug for Big Book Thumpers, which if anybody wants to know more about DAA, I'm one of the admins on Big Book Thumpers, and you can certainly, figure out who I am once you get on there. I do the Tuesday topic of the day. So I'm online, and which is something else that I had picked up from the military, because a lot of my brothers and sisters are overseas in remote locations, and they can't get to meetings. So social media became another outlet for me to carry this message. And so we start up this DAA meeting, and I get a call from a guy from Bangor, Maine. And he says, "Hey, I heard you're starting these big book meetings for addicts. What are you doing?" And I told him, I said, "Dude, we're just doing what we do in an AA big book meeting, but we're saying, hey, you can call yourself an addict here. You can talk about drugs here. and we don't want to change the book. We're sticking with the book because, you know,
the book works.
Yeah. What else do I need to say? You know, the book works, and we've seen what happened when people change the words around. You know, Tom Power's crew, All Addicts Anonymous, wrote a great book called Becoming Recovered. But it hasn't, they did that some years ago, and it doesn't seem to be taking off very much outside of upstate New York. And we thought sticking with the big book means that, you know, folks who know that book and know the program that's in that book, that's the original 12-step program. It's worked for people like me. It's worked for people that I know that are in the rooms, and it's worked for countless of addicts that have found recovery in CA since 1981, and apparently it's working for drug addicts over in Europe that, found a message of hope through Joe and Charlie, who I don't believe I've ever heard Joe and Charlie talk about drugs.
No.
You know, I've been to several of their weekends, and I've listened to quite a few of their talks. So it's pretty amazing. So this gentleman from Maine calls me up. He says, Steve, you know, what are you doing? Well, they've got two meetings now. And over in Jersey, they've got two meetings. And what we have going on is just very grassroots. And it's exciting. It's exciting to watch new people come in and go, I can tell my whole story here. Yes, you can tell your whole story here. You can recover here. You don't have to worry. And I just left our Sunday night big book meeting, and you never know. It wasn't, you know, all we do is talk about the steps and the solutions. So there's not a whole lot of drug talk. And in AA, I'm not an advocate of talking about everything, because I go back to that, what's my real purpose? And can I be a maximum service if I'm dividing you and I? You know, I don't talk about my politics. I don't talk about my religion. I don't talk about a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous or now in Drug Addicts Anonymous. I stick with our primary purpose, and that's never steered me wrong.
Let me ask you what you think of this. I wrote this, as a matter of fact, I wrote this today. There was a discussion, it might have been on Big Book, on Big Book Thumpers or The Rowdy, but I wrote this. Step one needs to have an association of experience. As for the rest of the steps are concerned, they will work as they are the solution and common to all the addictions. The rationale is that without the personal experience, you can have sympathy but not empathy. That is necessary to create a sufficient intimacy of common reality. In other words, you have to have sufficient credibility and know what you're talking about. God will take care of the rest, but you still need the spark of experience to create the flame of sustained recovery.
Well, I think in carrying the message, you absolutely do. In order to reach that person that's still hidden behind whether they're holding on to that last thread of denial, you absolutely have to have that common suffering. But what I've also seen is you know, before we had AA, you know, the Oxford group, alcoholics found freedom from folks who didn't drink. And as we all know, I mean, every day there's an alcoholic, there's an addict finding recovery in a church. You know, that does happen.
Right.
But I agree with you to the point of that person that's holding on to their disease, that's still nurturing it, that's still They haven't had the veil lifted from them yet. Absolutely, you have to have the same amount of suffering. You have to have been down that same road. You have to know what it's like to be dope sick, to reach somebody that's still dope sick. You have to know that. But I've watched, I know that a lot of the one-hour speaker meetings, there's addicts hiding out in those rooms, and they're hearing a message of hope and recovery, and they're latching on to that. And they're you know, what do we do when the addict crosses the road to us? When the addict comes knocking on our door for help?
You let him in.
The rules kind of change.
You know, my experience is that they're coming in younger now. Now, I know Bill had singleness of purpose, and that was the understanding that the alcoholic and the drug addict were of two different ilks. But the third tradition bothers me to some degree because it talks about the drug addict, what do they call them, the dope fiend that comes in with another, you know, a different other than alcoholism. Now, he comes in, and, of course, they have a big to-do about it. The pristine drunks are afraid that they're going to be found guilty by association, you know, like we usually do. And they, you know, and the conclusion was if we cast them out, it could be a death sentence. And, of course, one of the alcoholics came up with the statement, what would the master do? Now, of course, master meaning Jesus. What would Jesus do is the common vernacular. So then the answer was forthcoming. We had to let him in for good or for ill. We did let him in, and then the conclusion was, and he helped a lot of people. And that turned into thousands because of the earliness of the program. So who was he helping? Was he helping just addicts? Was he helping other alcoholics or both? Or, you know, so if we say, if we delineate that, is that not a crossover of that, of the third tradition? And we're saying, no, wait a minute, no, we're just alcoholic and you can't come in. Nobody got the memo from the third, that third tradition experience. The kids are coming in, they're coming in younger, not because of alcohol, they're coming in younger because of drugs and alcohol.
Yes, but I also, you know, as a career military person, you know, of course there's drug problems in the military, but there's plenty of folks that only abuse alcohol in the military. And, you know, once upon a time, my commanding officer, you know, we get a lot of collateral duties handed to us, and I was put in charge of my command's drug and alcohol program. And in my particular branch, it's often the running joke that the biggest drunk gets that job. And, you know, it's still held true. I was just the biggest sober drunk that got that job. But as my commanding officer pulled me into his office and said, you know, that he had this job. He had a deal to make for me. He had an offer I couldn't refuse. And I don't always out myself as a member of the fellowship. I'm not ashamed of it. I don't hide it, but I try to adhere to the 11th tradition. I try to practice anonymity in my job as well. But I told him, okay. I said, I'm not sure this is a good idea, sir. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if these people see me at a meeting, they might think the command's spying on them. And he looked at me and he said, well, they're going to see you there anyway, right? I said, well, yeah. And he said, well, I guess they'll get over it. The wisdom of the CO, you know. But a lot of these guys I had to deal with, they were just drunks. They were just alcoholics. And some of them were just maybe alcohol abusers and not necessarily drunks.
And they would go to meetings.
And they would go to young people's meetings because a lot of them were between the ages of 22 and 26. And they would hear drug talk. And they would say, come back. And they would tell me, I don't really connect with these guys because I just drink. You know, so there's two sides to that. I have a hard time, you know, a lot of the folks that I talk with, there's a lot of AA history revisionists out there. And, you know, there's a lot of folks rewriting AA history in order to sell a book or to push an idea.
Sure.
And, you know, I've had people tell me that Bill and Bob were both addicts. And, you know, I don't know that to be true. I mean, certainly Dr. Bob
took pills and Bill dropped LSD. It wasn't a addict LSD. He was thought that might be a way of enlightening the alcoholic to a different form of sobriety, that kind of deal. So it wasn't really an addiction. But Dr. Bob did do the pills because he was a doctor and he had access. We got a caller. I'd like to take that call. You okay with that?
Yeah. Absolutely, sir.
Okay. All right. Hello, caller.
Hey,
4948, you're on the air.
This is Steve Wood.
Oh, Steve. Okay. Oh, cool.
How you doing? Hey, it's great to hear. I've talked to Steven, or we call him Steven on Facebook, I guess. Steve, for quite a while, so it's nice to hear his voice. I mean, I'm used to his text, but I fully approve of the message. I just want to say, I really like it. It's great to hear his story. You know, there's a lot of a me I hear in him and stuff like that. And, you know, when I first put together Big Book Thumpers, I think I met Steve in another chat room, and I think, believe it or not, we may have gotten an argument about something. I don't remember what it was. It was a
Can you imagine? I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
But the more I got to know him, the more I realized that, hey, this guy has a message. And I started putting together an immense team a few years ago. And when I had the administration team put together, it was like, wow. And then he's so dedicated to Book Thumpers. And I just wanted to tell him, you know, from me, is that thanks for all the time he puts into it. And from the whole Big Book Thumpers, because we've grown huge. Without people like dedicated like him, it wouldn't be where it's at. And one more thing is, and we're thanks to Stephen, there's a church that my friend runs, and we're putting together 12-step meetings. I'm going to start a DAA meeting there in the next I'm hoping in the next 6 months.
Nice.
So I'm really looking forward to that. But anyways, I'll let you guys keep doing what you're doing, and nice to hear the whole story.
Likewise, buddy. Good to hear your voice, too.
All right. See ya.
Thanks for calling, Steve. Bye.
Yeah, that's really cool because me and Steve had bumped heads. And I was a couple years ago, I was finishing up a grad degree program. And so I wasn't getting to a lot of face-to-face meetings. And Mighty Spacebook provided a good diversion from me when I got sick of writing papers. And me and Steve met, I wasn't hearing what he was saying, and I didn't like him a whole lot. I left a room that he was in, and he reached out to me a couple times. I give him a lot of credit for that because I was probably a bit of a jerk. He reached out to me a couple times, and then we just started talking, you know, back and forth. And then he just, you know, he invited me to this group, and I joined, and then he... You know, then all of a sudden he's like, hey, do you want to be an admin? And I'm like, you know, what am I getting voluntold into now? You know, but service is service. And you know, it's something that just comes second nature to me now. I've learned more about being a servant in the fellowship than I ever have in the military. I mean, the military has been great to me as far as being a servant goes as well. But most of what my success in the military comes back to me practicing the spiritual principles that a bunch of drunks taught me in a church basement, you know?
Oh, absolutely. The principles are the key to this. Step 11, I would say, to me, it works like this. Prayer is the quarterback. Meditation is the feedback. And self-examination is the goal line.
Absolutely.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, and that puts us in a position to grow spiritually. You know, the Big Book says our sobriety is contingent upon the daily maintenance of a spiritual condition. Of course, the question I ask, what maintains itself of itself? Even the sun's going to extinguish in its day. So what I found is nothing really maintains itself. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're declining spiritually, your recovery and then your sobriety becomes tentative. Have you found that?
Absolutely. And I you know, and you've heard it said too, 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps. And I always look at it like this. If I'm not doing 10, 11, and 12, I'm drowning. I'm not,
right.
You know, so they're essential. And you know, I found... in my sobriety, getting away from being a servant to that newcomer. You know, the newcomer teaches me more than, you know, my sponsor's been sober 57 years. I mean, the guy got sober with Methuselah. He's been around the block a half a dozen times at least. And you know, as much as I love and admire the man, he's a great person, taught me a lot about the 11th step. What I learned most from is that new guy whose eyes open up and they start experiencing, practicing spiritual principles and how they really work. It's like getting a front row seat to God's handiwork. you know, all the stuff my sponsor tells me a lot of great stuff about AA back in the day. Tells me a lot of great stuff about that, and that's awesome. But when I see that newcomer go knock on the door for the first time to make amends, and they tell me about it afterwards, and they're you know, fired up because, oh my God, this stuff really works. You guys aren't full of crap. It's amazing to see that transformation that comes about, and it becomes infectious because then I want to go like, oh, I think I owe an amends to somebody, and that just starts to, you know, that type of atmosphere just breeds a community of spiritual growth and recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. They come in, you know, I'll put it this way. We come in spiritually bankrupt, or I did, and I see most of that. That's the case.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come in spiritually bankrupt, spirituality becomes like not only uncomfortable, it's almost painful.
Huh.
You know, it's like when the light a shadow recoils from the light.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not because, you know, because alcohol is, you know, it's the spirit. So the real, the true spirit of God is kind of just anesthetized. It's not there. You can literally see people's eyes dark when they come in. Their eyes, the windows are the eyes are windows to the soul, and you can see that darkness in there.
Yeah.
And they're in so much pain, they're in there. And then when they finally start working the steps and they start, and just a glimmer, you know, just like willingness, like I said, the problem with willingness, and that's what it takes, is that it takes discipline. The problem with discipline, it takes motivation. And the problem with motivation is not now becomes mañana. But once they take that step, and once they start getting into that spiritual understanding, you could see as a sponsor, sometimes you'll be sitting with a guy, and all of a sudden the lights come on. It's really quite something to see if you've never experienced that. He starts to get it. You could see the spirit starting to evolve back again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's really a joy that a lot of folks miss. I think it's in the 12 and 12. It says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So it's saying, not only do I have to speak a fifth step, I have to hear a fifth step. Who hears a fifth step?
Absolutely.
A sponsor.
Yeah, well, you know, we tell people when they come in the rooms, you got to get a sponsor, you got to get a sponsor, you got to get a sponsor. We don't really tell them what, you know, we don't really, how can you tell them what a sponsor is? I started telling them, hey, you need to have an experience with the steps so that you can be a sponsor. You need to have an experience with these steps so that you can become a sponsor and be there for the next person. Because all my spiritual experiences in recovery, I missed them all. They were all in retrospect. I remember being like a year and a half sober going, holy crap, I'm happy. When did I become happy? You know? And then, I mean, I've had so many joys. I mean, there was, I'm a parent to two children. They're grown now. But, you know, those obviously I was there in the moment. But other than that, virtually everything that's ever, and I've had amazing things happen to me since I started walking this walk. I missed them all. I'm a day late, a dollar short to my own spiritual awakenings that I have to look back over my shoulder and go, oh yeah, that happened. But the guys that give me the privilege of actually being a sponsor in verb and not just in title, I get to witness that firsthand. And the ripple effect becomes very infectious for me. Our Sunday night home group is called the Flimsy Reed Group, and it's just so apropos because how many of us, you know, you say we come in with those dark circles under our eyes, and I came in with so much doubt. I was like, I don't know if this is going to work for me. Because when you told me don't drink and go to meetings, I thought, oh, my God, here's one more thing I'm going to fail at. You know, I'm the guy that went out drinking, and all I did was drink the night before going to court for my third DWI. You know, I'm the guy that couldn't stay sober the night before I had to go to court for a DWI. I'm the guy that couldn't stay sober when I had a wonderful young lady that wanted to just, all she wanted me to do was not drink. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do that. I'm that guy. And when you guys said, hey, don't drink and go to meeting tomorrow, I thought, great, here's one more thing I'm going to fail at. And I had all this doubt. But despite all the doubt, I just had that glimmer of hope that was there, that tiny little thread that just kind of said, grab onto this and maybe it'll work. And it sure did, you know, and I'm grateful. And thank you for asking me to come out here tonight and talk to you guys all the way across the country. Well, you're not all the way. Steve's all the way. You're in Texas, the great planet.
Well, actually, we are in DePaul, though.
Oh, yeah, hey. DePaul, sorry. And all points in between.
Well, yeah, you know, we're India, and we were befriended on Facebook by the GSO in India. I don't know if that's going to, the subcontinent is the England, you know. So at some rate, because of the Internet phenomenon, we've gotten around pretty well. When we started this 4 years ago, I had no idea, but the browsers started like Google Chrome. When you say you're in Poland and you come across Rum Radio, it's going to give you the option of reading it in Polish.
Yeah.
They started that about 4 years ago. I had no idea, and I think that's part of the phenomenon where they could click on. Now, the language and the culture, from what I understand, is like 60 or 70%. Accurate, you know, like some of the stuff just don't translate well. But, you know, most people speak English because English is the language of money. So if you want to make money,
yeah,
you better speak English. So I think that's part of it, too. But it does, this gets around, and this phenomenon, you know, is getting the word out on sponsorship. And I really believe that that's the key. One drunk, one addict, giving it back to the new guy, you know, one of the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works.
Absolutely.
When other activities fail, and people miss that. It's not the meetings. We've given out the message. I'm going to get on my soapbox. We've given out the message. Matter of fact, the Grapevine just did a page. I couldn't believe
it.
Don't
drink and go to meetings.
Oh, man. I saw that there was a thread that went on and on and on. And, well, you know, and they just did the sponsorship book. I looked at the book. It was okay. Not a lot of meat in there, but I was hoping that there would have been a change of psychology on that, and that just reinforces the fact that the meetings are the solution, and the meetings are nice, and that's the fellowship, and that's, you know, that's part of the deal. But the solution is working the steps, and you can't work the steps without a sponsor, and that's the solution. You know, and I try to think working them quickly is tantamount. You were saying the year. I had a sponsor, you're going to like this, from New Jersey, Dan, and he was a ship's captain, like a Joe Hazelton captain. He was a commodore, actually, in his area in the oil industry. He you know, did the oil rigs, and he did the huge, super, super giant dealies. You know, like, he was showing me some of the stuff. Brilliant guy, chronic relapser. And so he started working with me at Post Oak, and he got into it. You know, he liked the idea that we were the point of the sword, he used to say. But in his home group in New Jersey, yeah, his home group in New Jersey, they asked you to go to meetings for a year before you worked the steps, and then you went to step studies to work the steps.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? That's insane. People, you know, when I told people that, they would get mad at me for saying it. No, that's not all of New Jersey. That was just
his particular group, and I've heard some of them in Canada did it that way. But because the pamphlet, the eight pamphlets that suggest 1 year sobriety prior to sponsoring. Where did that come from? See, that's where the year gets you. You say a year, and now it's a step a month, because now at the end of a year, you could start sponsoring people. So where's the year? Okay, don't do any drastic and nothing drastic for the first year, because who you are now will not be who you are then. You know, don't get married, don't buy a house, don't sell a house, don't do a business, you know, any of that. Don't do anything for the first year. And that's what happened to the year. The year that has nothing to do with sponsorship. Bill W. had, what, 5 or 6 months when he, from Bob, Ebby had 60 days. Dr. Bob had 18 days when him and Bill went to find Bill D. I mean, so our history doesn't relate to any of that. Their agreement was, once you work the steps, even in the beginning when there was only the six, when you did that, you did your amends, you went to the hospital to get yourself a prospect, which is a sales term. We're going to go sell you an idea that we can attain and maintain long-term sobriety if we do certain things. That's the sale. And we sell hope to the hopeless.
Absolutely. Well, that's, you know, one of the things I ask all the gentlemen that I work with. I say, you know, I usually throw it out as a question. I say, okay, we're on step 9. When do we start working step 10? And they'll look at me. And I'll be like, well, you got this rather large list here. And I can tell you from personal experience that, you know, having a large list and you've been stone cold, stark raving sober for years, that really sucks.
It's intimidating. It's intimidating,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, I said, the day you start on step 9, you should be that same day looking at step 10, looking at step 11, looking at step 12. We start talking about, you know, they ask, well, how do you do step 10? And that's great. I say, here's what I do. I do this.
Right.
I'll oftentimes take certain step 10 conversations with my sponsees. I will call them up and I'll say, hey, you know what? I'm at work. I'm being judgmental of my boss because this, that, and the other. And what just happened is that, you know, and I'll go down the list, and, you know, I was an education major at one time, and they always told you modeling behavior is the best form of teaching. And
sure.
So as my 10th step, I just go back to some of the guys that I sponsor, and I'll just kind of put that out there. And oftentimes that gets them doing their 10th step, and they're like, you know, is the rule I got to talk to you about this? I'm like, well, I said, I sure appreciate it if you talk to me about your 10th step, but I bet sometimes that some of your buddies would probably, you know, get something out of it as well. And some of your buddies would probably, you know, maybe get off their butts and start working their program a little bit harder if they see you doing yours.
Go ahead. With my sponsees, I usually have them start 9. They start the amends process and commit to me, and then because sometimes you don't know how long it's going to take anyway, restitutions will never be made sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes it might take years. Sometimes it might take, you know, the closer ones, the better. But they commit to get started. They get started, and then we go right into 10. There's no, you know, but we're still in contact. I take them through the 12, that means we're not finished up. Usually I allude to the fact that, you know, once they're halfway through their amends process, then they're pretty well, you know, and then I try to encourage them after step 5 to be a sponsor. How do you like that?
Well, I will too.
Oh, would you?
Because,
oh, good.
One of the things, you know, Bill in the 12 and 12 calls step 6 the one that separates the men from the boys. I personally think it's step 9. I think step 9 is the one that really, you know, up until then, we're really talking about theory and writing. We're talking, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, a lot of us, I know me, I drew lines in the sand on certain amends. And I share a lot of that with the guys that I sponsor freely. I tell them, you know, hey, this is what I got from not making amends. This is what happened to me when I just refused to look at these certain amends that I needed to make. You know, I'm a little hesitant to put time limits on people for making amends because I don't want them to just comply with my demands. I know that, you know, in working with others, if he's to find God, the desire must come from within. And if they're hesitating, they're still holding on to something. And I know for me, it sucked. It's a horrible way to, having a spiritual awakening on the short bus, it's a bumpy ride. It really isn't fun, but I don't believe that I could have done it any other way. I suffered horribly because of not making amends. But when I hit that emotional bottom, I got off my butt and I went and made amends and found freedom. And it's like going to the gym 3 months out of the year. You know, sometimes that's how I feel like I've worked my program. You know, I get in shape and then I go get lazy and then I got to go get in shape again. And it's not.
Ain't that the case?
It's not the best way to work this thing, you know. And I always tell myself that it's easier to stay in shape than it is to get in shape, you know. And
right, but yeah, it's easier to stay healthy than to get healthy. Get well. It's easier to stay healthy than get well. Step six, I mean, that comes up in the big book as it separates. And what I found, you might find this interesting, it goes back to step five. See, once we've done the hard work of four and five, which is hard work, right? And then step six, step five, it's the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So by step five, you finish step five, right? Now you've made you have a beginning contact with God, so you're spiritually enlivened. You're not drinking. You haven't for a little while anyway. So all those problems have gone away. All the pain is gone. So now there's no the motivation to work. The steps are gone because the pain is gone. The key really is to keep them moving quickly to six, because now after six, they're more than halfway through. Five, they're not halfway yet. And I found that to be one of the keys, is that once the pain is gone, because it's the beginning of a true kinship between God and man, they've had a spiritual awakening or at least an experience of some kind. So six is kind of put off to the side as not being, I'm good now. I'm good. I'm sober. I got a contact with God. Hey, I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to do anymore. Can you back off?
I'm all about the loophole. That's you know, my default mode just seems to get lazy. And you know, my first sponsor, after we did my fifth step, and he sent me home to do six and seven and finish up five, he sent me home to have my moment of quiet time and then reflect on six and seven. He said, now, the choice you have, and he points to the paper that has my four step on, he's like, you can live with this, or you can grow in the likeness of your creator. He said, the choice is yours. And of course, you know, I nodded my head north and south, and I went, well, I would have grown the likeness of my creator. But my actions after that showed that on Monday I wanted to be spiritual, Tuesday I wanted to be selfish, Wednesday I wanted to be self-seeking and selfish, and then in the evening I wanted to be spiritual. And I sometimes, when I reflect back and I go, well, how much of that is just me being a young guy in recovery? You know, and then how much of that is me just being an obstinate, spiritually sick individual. And then I realize I'm just grateful that I didn't pick up over it, you know.
Go ahead. I was going to say, we try to grow spiritually, but it is a progress. That's why they call it a trudge. You don't really ever get to the end of this thing. You know, there's always something. There's always something that gets in the way, self-centeredness, self-seeking, self-pity, and usually by turning our mind to someone we can help. Remember to pray, you know, to do all that. But, you know, my experience is nobody reaches the end of this thing. This is a journey. There is no destination. Some people are more evolved.
and some people are less evolved. But the bottom line is, did you put a plug in the jug? Did you drink today? No. Did you drug today? No. Okay, well, let's see what else we can do to be of maximum service. I don't believe there's any more than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, sharing what was given to us. I think, you know, that part of the 12th step, I mean, it's not just speaking at a podium. It's not just raising your hand in a meeting. It's helping that person whose car is stuck on the side of the road, if you have the means and ability to do that. It's going to visit that person in the hospital while their loved ones are in there. You know, that those messages did more for me than anything said in any meeting ever. You know, and I mean, I run my mouth too much in meetings, and it's the stuff that I do outside of meetings that kind of makes up for the stuff that I say in meetings sometimes.
I came across this. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And showing a true interest in someone else, the big book says, you know, sit down and talk to the guy, see what he really is all about. And the key to that is let him talk. If you get somebody new talking because you're interested in what he's saying and he sincerely feels that, eventually he will reveal himself.
Absolutely. That's a lot of my 12-step work is involves talking about sports teams, talking about music, making any connection that I can make with the person. You know, when my sponsor and I were talking about the third step, I remember him telling me, you know, I'm a musician, I play the guitar, and he said, Steve, if I gave you a brand new guitar and you stuck it in the closet and you never played the thing for a year, and you didn't play any of your other guitars, you just didn't play any for a year, and you took this brand new shiny guitar out after a year, would you be able to make beautiful music with it? And I said, well, no, I'd probably be rusty. It would be out of tune. It would be this. Now, he learned all that from talking to me and learning about me. And he took the big book and put it in the language that I would connect with. You know, because he said, Steve, that's what we're doing here with this decision. If you, you know, you make this decision today and you don't work at this thing every day, this decision is meaningless.
Mm.
You know, that's not found in the big book, but to me, that's every day of my third experience. You know,
that's experience. Yeah,
absolutely.
Experience.
You know, hopefully our words validate what's in the book.
You know the iconic picture, the man on the bed?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's the picture of Dr. Bob, who was 18 days sober, who was a doctor. And then Bill W. was the architect, you know, the chief architect of AA. And then the third guy was Bill D., who was a lawyer. So and then if you ever see the picture, there's a book in the guy's hand, right? But this picture is a picture that transpired in 1935, 4 years prior to the big book. What was the book he had in his hand? But more likely it was a Bible.
It was the Bible.
Yeah, because they only let you bring Bibles into the hospitals.
Yeah.
The point is, okay, we have a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief, but the point is it was one drunk talking to another.
Yeah.
That's what we have found to be the answer. And of course, we got the big book and other program literature of experience and a spiritual goal, but the main energy, the thing that works the best, is one drunk talking to another.
Absolutely.
Hey guys,
well, thank you so much, Steve.
Time.
I really appreciate it. Pardon me, you have anything else?
Let me chime in.
No, sir, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come on the show and talk to you all.
Oh, well, thank you. So you were really good. I appreciate your service, the vision you have, the number of people that you've helped. I mean, when I do Rum Radio, but I'm sure you feel the same way, I feel like I'm on a life and death errand.
Yeah. I hear you, man. And I actually like. I've been listening. I've been downloading talks, and I've been really liking the format. You know, it's a conversation. It's not just a person talking from a podium for an hour.
I just did that, as a matter of fact. I just came in at the Heights group. They had me accidentally. They asked me to talk. They liked it, though.
I'm not opposed to that.
I know. It makes it interesting. Yeah, different little bounce.
Yes.
I really appreciate the program tonight. I just wanted to chime in and say yes. One drunk talking to another, that's what makes this whole thing go. And I wanted to give a little heads up about the future and what we can expect a little bit. Things have changed in my world. I'm mostly a marriage counselor. Half of the marriages end in divorce. And nowadays, what has changed is that half of the divorces involve porn. So as we talk to the guys... And we talk about cross addictions, and we talk about alcohol and drugs. Also, other things are coming in: gambling, porn. So one of my goals is to be unshockable. And some of the stories that I hear now in this world, as I listen to people and help them really get in recovery, totally in recovery, is that. What they're dealing with, what we're going to be hearing a lot more of is problems with porn as well. And the brain research shows that looking at porn has almost an identical effect in the brain as smoking crack cocaine. So it's not harmless, and a lot of people do it, but it's way more harmful than we thought before. So just a little heads up for everybody. As you're listening to Fifth Steps and helping people write their fourth step, encourage them to be really honest about everything, including porn.
Yeah, liquor's not a symptom.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. The drugs and the alcohol are a symptom of the disease. The key to long-term recovery is causes and conditions. But it takes work to get there, folks. It's not an overnight deal. If there was a pill that I could have took, believe me, I would have found it. It takes work.
I would have been just off the way.
Yeah, time takes time, and you grow from this. But, you know, you didn't get to where you coming into AA or NA or CA overnight. It took years to get there, and sometimes it takes years to really get into maximum service. So thanks again, Steve. Appreciate your time and your service.
All right. Thank you, sir. You have a good night.
Thank you. In closing, I'd like to say that Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi. And like I said, we're also in Nepal because they like our yak. We 2,800 towns, cities, and villages. And we're about between 300,000 and 400,000 hits to the website. Took about 4 years. It continues to grow by word of mouth. People like what they see. There's no money being made, and we're anonymous to the 11th tradition. Didn't work that way on Facebook. Sorry, but on the website we do remain anonymous and try to stay to that tradition of anonymity because there's no big shots. In AA. If one shot, we're all shot. So remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night. Thanks, sir.
Good night.
Have a good night, gentlemen.
Thank you.